Hi, welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network's iTalk Movies. Today I am in studio with Scott Takeda. You'll be seeing him coming up in The Space Between Us, but you might also know him already from Gone Girl, Dallas Buyers Club, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, and more.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's iTalk Movies.
It feels so good.
Yeah, the applause.
I love it.
And thank you all for joining us. My God, Steve, you came. Thank you.
And of course, Scott's joking around, you guys, because there's no one in here with us, but we are glad that you are with us, watching or listening, wherever you may happen to be. I am your host, Zoe Hewitt. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Zoe Said What. And sitting directly to my left is Scott. Scott, where can everyone find you?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm supposed to be on Instagram, too, but it's at Scott Takeda, Scott Takeda. Ta-da.
Ta-da. Your name has a good ta to start with for that.
Yes, exactly. You know? Yeah.
So you have a really cool movie coming out, The Space Between Us.
Exactly, yeah.
And I love the theme of this movie about finding yourself and finding your place. So can you describe, I guess, for anyone who doesn't know what the movie's about, what is it?
You know, this is actually kind of a feel-good movie, if you will, kind of a family film about kind of the need to belong and the need to be a part of something. And it's essentially about the first child born on Mars and the kinds of complications that you might go through and the isolation that you might feel if you were just living on Mars and didn't have any of your peers around you. Mm-hmm. So it stars Asa Butterfield, who is really fabulous in the film. And he, you know, connects up with a girl in the on Earth, played by Britt Robertson. And, you know, the movie kind of follows them as he goes back to Earth. Actually, doesn't even go back to Earth. He goes to Earth and kind of tries to find her.
And so it had been a fluke, right, that he was born on Mars, but he has to stay there for 16 years until his bones sort of solidify enough to handle the Earth's gravity. But what I feel like is so fascinating, right, there is this romantic aspect and this feel-good, but it's something that I feel like everyone can relate to about finding your place, whether it's within your family, within your career, just within life.
Yeah, and one of the nice things about this film is it's, I guess you might want to put it in a family film or a young adult type of category, but it does have kind of a story that I think a lot of people can relate to, and unless you're like, I don't know, 1 year old, you might not understand the language. But no, it is about belonging. It is about wanting to find your place in life, and it's really kind of a sweet film. I think with all the kind of, you know, chaos that we have kind of going on in the world these days, kind of having a nice little feel-good message is nice.
And I'm a big fan of feel-good. My feeling is after I spend a couple hours in the theater, I want to walk out feeling good. I don't want to feel depressed and miserable.
Yeah.
So I love that.
Yeah, exactly. And this is one of these types of films that I think it'll make you cry, it'll make you laugh. I mean, there's that kind of the whole, you know, stereotype of that, but no, it does. You'll leave the theater feeling much happier than you were when you went in.
And I feel like that's a sort of genre, I guess, that Peter Chalsom is known for a little bit, like Shall We Dance, and even the Hannah Montana movie. So about trying to fit in. So what was it like working with him?
Peter was fabulous, and actually I got to know him through Serendipity. Would have loved to have worked on that film, but you know, that's also kind of, he does have this kind of almost a throwback, a little bit as far as his storytelling goes, and fabulous. And you know, he's got this wonderful British accent, and he's just so calming on the set. But really, for the first time I've ever had this experience, after getting cast, I got this. He called me. I happened to be in acting workshop at the time, so I obviously did not answer my phone, but he left this wonderful voice message that I still have recorded, saved on there for posterity, just, you know, saying how wonderful it was to have a chance to work with me and how excited he was to have a chance to tell the story.
And that's a beautiful example of how gracious he was, too, to take the time to call anyone, I know. You know, and say that.
Yeah, I've been fortunate to be you know, on a lot of projects lately, and you know, terrific directors to work with. But this is the first time anyone has actually picked up the phone to call me.
Yeah. So it's almost better that you didn't answer the phone, I feel, because now you have this amazing voicemail
exactly.
to keep.
Exactly. Yeah.
Forever.
Forever and ever and ever.
You need to back that up somewhere.
I know. I need to put it on the cloud. Yes. And, you know, I think I read somewhere that, you know, we had cassette tapes and we had before that mm-hmm. A-track. And so, you know, the MP3 is mm-hmm. going to somehow, some way die away. So I'm going to have to put it somewhere that it can be translated and translated and translated mm-hmm. for forever and ever.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so what was it like on set where you do have a lot of different emotions tied up in the movie, that it's not all action, all comedy, all of one type of genre?
That, you know, that's a... I was my time on set is kind of before I'm the doctor who delivers the baby, so mm-hmm. I'm an astronaut who in the film, and so I think for my purpose on the set it was very, very much more scientific and focused on mission, because, you know, we're astronauts mm-hmm. and we're an astronaut team and we've been training in for years upon years mm-hmm. for this mission. So I don't know if we had a whole lot of you know, love story or family mm-hmm. type of feeling, but, you know, certainly they were shooting different scenes while we were on set, so it was kind of nice to be around that mm-hmm. Part of that story.
But even just birth, and especially in this case, a birth that takes place in a spot that it's not really supposed to, has a lot of emotion wrapped up in it.
Oh, sure,
new life and sort of doing something in a scary new place. And so I love also that you were a doctor in the science, because we were talking earlier that when you were in college, you were actually studying engineering.
I was,
and the science, I feel like now maybe your parents got a little bit of that science back.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, they as I like to say, it's an old-fashioned statement. I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV and the movies. And in this one, I play a astronaut mm-hmm. doctor.
It's like a double whammy.
I know. Ba-doom, boom. You know, and we even had that little right stuff kind of slow motion walking, you know, with the helmet in the hand mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So there's a nice little scene of like that. But one thing that was really kind of cool is while I was researching the role, I reached out to an astronaut physician mm-hmm. from NASA named Scott Parazynski. And so had a chance to talk with him, you know, two or three times on the phone and exchange emails, and really got to learn the science behind delivering a baby on mm-hmm. in weightless environment or low gravity environment, mm-hmm. And as well as how the astronauts on any mission, they train together for years upon mm-hmm. years upon years. So it's in many ways they are each other's family. Mm-hmm. So to suddenly have not just the mission commander, but, you know, a trusted colleague suddenly needing to deliver a baby, I mean, that affects everyone in the crew mm-hmm. because it's like, it's not just, it's one of us, it's one of right. our family there. So, yeah, there was a lot of kind of emotion around that.
And so did you get to go to any weightless environments? Did you get to train in that regard? I mean, on Mars you would have heavier, right? Is it heavier on Mars? No, it's heavier here because that was the pressure on his body.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So
you can bounce around on Mars.
You can bounce around on Mars. There is gravity on Mars. Uh-huh. But we had the chance to do a lot of this kind of... we didn't do weightless training, which would have been fun.
Right.
I think they call it the vomit comet or something like that, when the plane goes up and then goes down.
They just did that on The Bachelor. Confession, I watched it.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Yes. I'd have loved to have had a chance to do that.
And she did throw up, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It sounds scary because the plane is free falling.
Exactly.
Just at your speed.
Yeah.
You're going to hit really hard when the plane stops free falling.
Yeah, it's like, hold on.
Yeah.
But I didn't have a chance to do that, but did have a chance to do all the kind of ropes and, you know, where they kind of make you look like you're weightless.
Oh, no, what do you mean?
Well, you're all harnessed up uh-huh. there, and then you have all these cables around you, and then you have to train to hold yourself like in a Superman pose, like you're floating through space, uh-huh. and like you're in weightless environment. Mm-hmm. But in reality, you're not. So you're straining like crazy to hold yourself into this position, You know, and yet trying to make it look like this is easy.
That's such a fascinating point, because, of course, I realized that people go in harnesses, like Superman's not really flying, but it didn't occur to me that, of course, then you have to work to look natural at the same time.
Exactly.
I don't know, I pictured, like, you're strapped in, but off you go. But, right, it, like, that's work.
Yeah, yeah. I shortly after that movie, Gravity, came out, and so I'm watching Sandra Bullock, and it's like, you know, she's, I have one scene. Mm-hmm. I have one scene where I'm doing the weightless thing. But I mean, she's weightless through most of the film, and I'm just going, oh my gosh, it's a lot of work. It really is.
Is the harness up on your chest? Like, where does the harness go?
It's like right around the center of your weight. So it's right around your pelvis area. Uh-huh. And sometimes it does go a little bit into your stomach area. But it's, you know, some of my colleagues had more dance training, and so to watch them just go flips and flips and flips, it's like, now that's impressive.
Because, right, that's not a lot of support then. If it's just around sort of your midsection a little bit, but you still have to, like, go horizontal?
Yeah, so, I mean, if we were, like, weightless, you know, you could be upside down, you could be, right, because there's no up or down anywhere in space.
But you as the actor, you're, like, usually you see people in movies, they're sort of floating along horizontally when they do that.
Which just makes sense. It'd be almost like swimming, you know, you're just grabbing onto things and you're just kind of pushing yourself along. And so what was interesting is having to time it, because they have you on rails. So you would grab onto something, and you have to kind of push yourself as they are pulling you along.
Oh, right.
Because if in a weighted environment, if I just push myself, I would just start swinging.
Right.
So it was a lot of coordination between the actor and the camera and the people pulling me along as I was going through.
That's really interesting. Is there a specific choreographer for that, like a dance-type choreographer? Or is it just, it's you, the director, the camera, like all these people just sort of coordinate together?
Kind of coordinate together, and kind of it's based a little bit upon what can the camera actually capture. It's kind of, you know, based on what do we actually need the scene to do. You know, do I need to be going in this direction or that direction? Based also on where they have the rails set up for the harnesses. And I think originally they were wanting me to do a little bit more, but when they saw that I had no ballet training at all, thanks, Mom.
Yeah.
Thank you. Actually, thank you. Seriously.
Growing up in Denver, taking ballet.
Yeah. I was teased enough as a child. That would not have... No, actually, I wasn't teased.
Or Fort Collins.
Fort Collins. Go Lambkins. Go Lambkins.
So, no ballet training. They dialed that back.
Yeah, they dialed that back. So, but yeah, I still had to kind of float through the air. And, and what was kind of fascinating is you... When you're not doing anything, you can just kind of be sitting down. So you can just stay in a seated position, just floating. So, you know, some of it was just sitting, you're reading a book. And meanwhile, you're like going, oh, this is digging into my side.
Pain for work, right?
Yeah.
Suck it up. I think that being weightless sounds so fascinating. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, if I could fly, I want to try it. Type of deal. But you've worked on some really cool projects, but this is your first time being weightless, right? I mean,
exactly.
And you've worked with really cool directors, like on Gone Girl, Dallas Buyers Club. I mean, these are big, well-known films. And so how has, like, your roles are also in some way, like, you've been a producer, right? Which also overlaps with your real life a little bit.
Yeah. What was nice about Gone Girl is that it kind of tied back into what I do when I'm not in front of the camera. I'm behind the camera as a director and a producer. So, and also having a background in television news. So it was kind of nice because I could just kind of be myself in many ways and just be dude in charge and got deadlines to do. Interestingly enough, it was really a lot of fun to work with David Fincher. He's just a brilliant director. And just see how he organized a set, how he organized a scene. Also, you know, working that exact same time, you have Ben Affleck, who's a director, and you have Tyler Perry, who's a director. Mm-hmm. So really just seeing how he was directing his actors, who, when they're not acting, are also directors as well, too. And so whenever I was not specifically in on camera, I would just be sitting in the background, and instead of waiting, I'd just be watching. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a master's class in directing.
Right, you've got three very successful directors.
Exactly.
Who are all right in one spot.
I know.
And that casting with Tyler Perry, too, at the time, I feel like people talked about it, that it was such an unusual choice, or a surprising choice. But that whole movie worked, and it worked so well.
Yeah, yeah.
And did I understand that you weren't even given the end of the script? They were so, like, tight-mouthed about it that you got your pages and that's it? Is that correct?
Yeah, there was a lot of... I just got the small amount that I got. And strangely enough, you know, I shot 2 days. We shot a lot, but a lot of it kind of got cut out. So all my lines got cut, too. So, but it was still, you know, it was still a lot of fun to be on that set and to learn. Mm-hmm. And wow, a master's class, truly, in filmmaking.
And you are also a producer type character with Wisco Tangy Tango. I keep saying tangy. It's like a tongue twister for me.
Yeah.
Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, which I will now say once and not say again because I don't know why I can't say that. And you have this great scene where you're trying to find someone who's childless to go off and report.
Yeah. Going back to my television news days, you know, what was fascinating is I do remember being in news during the first Gulf War, and I was in a much smaller television station at the time. But you know, the discussions that we'd be having, the news director to everyone else, and what to expect in covering a war. So I understood the seriousness of it, and in this particular case. You know, this is based off of an actual book, The Taliban Shuffle, and about a correspondent's experience covering Pakistan and Afghanistan, and having it happen, you know, while, you know, they had the Iraq war going on. So just as the American troops were incredibly stretched thin, so were the news, you know, groups covering that. So it was the scene basically is I send Tina Fey off to war. You know, and so the actual scene written was fairly short, but the directors were very, you know, very much into doing the two takes as written, and then just letting us improvise. Mm-hmm. And so I just kept on improvising and just making stuff up, and most of that improvisation ended up making the film. But yeah, I was able to kind of, you know, grasping the exhaustion that most news managers have, as well as the desperation for, I can't send anyone who's married, I can't send anyone with kids, so you guys are all you're it. You're the single childless people, and if you die, I'll be sad, but, you know, you have no dependents, so who wants to go to war?
I mean, it's such a strange and funny concept. And so, with knowing that your scene wound up mostly improvised, that's what made the final cut, did it make you feel especially good, like, when you saw that, like, pat on the back, like, I really did that?
I did that, yeah. No, I actually had no idea what was going to happen, because we shot 7 or 8 different ways. Mm-hmm. So who knows how they were going to end up editing it, but when I saw the final cut, I went, oh, yes, yes, yes. Oh, that was written. Yeah, that was written.
And so did you go around, like, to your wife and to your friends and family going, like, I did that?
Yeah. And then I was kind of bummed that they didn't use some of the lines, too, because after you're not getting any responses for, who wants to go to war? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, so, well, you know, it's Tuesday, so we're cleaning out the fridges on Thursday, so if you have any food in there, you know, get that out of there. Oh, and we my daughter's selling Girl Scout cookies. Thin Mints are back, so, you know, give me your orders. We can ship them to Iraq, obviously. You know, so I was improvising all that, and it's like, oh, none of that made it.
Well, this was your chance to include all those lines.
It's there. It's on Popcorn Talk.
Yes. And it's interesting, too, because you've worked with... I was commenting earlier that it's funny looking at your credits because you've worked with now Tina Fey from SNL, Will Ferrell, so you've got sort of this SNL thing going on a little bit.
I know.
And Will Ferrell said that he thought you were great at improv. Is that right?
Wow, yeah. You know, I was had a chance to do a scene with Will, and the particular director was the writer as well, so he allowed us to do a couple takes, and then once he got what he wanted, he just said, okay, make it yours. Mm-hmm. And so I was just started improvising stuff as a bank manager, mm-hmm. you know, after I tell him, sorry, yeah, you're out of money, sorry. You know, then I start selling him, you know, hey, you know, if you want to open up a new account, we're giving away free iPods. Uh-huh. You know, and just making stuff up in there, and he just starts cracking up and laughing. And the camera was not on him, it was on me at the time. Mm-hmm. So when they reversed the camera, you know, the director got into Will's face and says, no laughing. So it's like, oh, yeah. So I made Will laugh. So I don't know. Does that make me funny? I don't know.
I think it gives you, like, excellent, like, brownie points in the world
brownie
of life.
Points. I know. I made Will Ferrell laugh.
I know. I love him. So I think
terrific.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And so when you're working on set like that with someone who is really known for comedy, and even in Tina Fey as well, known mm-hmm. for comedy, known for that improv, even in more serious times, is there that sense of, we're going to joke around a little bit? Or do you really see that more serious side come out?
You know, it's what was fascinating about both of them is, you know, whether or not it's a comedic scene or not, they both approached it very, very seriously, like professionals. Mm-hmm. So I think both of them are very, very nice people to begin mm-hmm. with. But they take the craft mm-hmm. very seriously, whether or not it be a drama scene mm-hmm. or more of a comedic scene. You know, they wanted me to tell the story so it has an impact on the audience. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that I kind of took away from that is it's okay to be serious about comedy, mm-hmm. you know. And so I have a great deal of respect for their approach to the art and the craft.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you have to be serious about your job regardless if you
sure.
want to get your job done
yeah.
to begin with. And it's interesting, too, with your roles. So you've played a lot of stereotypical Asian roles, I'd say, then, like, in terms of, right, the doctor and the pharmacist. And do you feel like when you look at roles, do you feel like you have to go, wait a minute, I want to step back from that? Or, hey, I get that. Does that affect you at all when you see those roles come your way?
Not necessarily. I guess I don't necessarily see that as stereotypical Asian roles. Mm-hmm. I do know that I tend to play roles where I'm smart mm-hmm. and in charge.
Mm-hmm.
So if they happen to fall into roles more physician-like,
mm-hmm.
you know, most of my roles require an advanced degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I've been told by somebody in casting that I just was opening my mouth and just talking. She goes, I can tell that you're smart. And I went, uh-oh. And she goes, oh, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. That's very hard to do.
I like that. That's hard to do.
It's like I wasn't trying to do anything. I just was talking about the circumference of the glass and how the mm-hmm. refraction of the water was, whatever.
Bringing that engineering. Right, and stereotypical not in the way of sort of the quote-unquote bad stereotype, but stereotype
sure.
of, right, like you come off as intelligent and like we will believe that you can prescribe us medicine. Thank you very much.
I sometimes liken my roles as I'm the person who says no. So, you know, from a storytelling perspective, the hero, the mm-hmm. protagonist needs to go through a series of conflicts mm-hmm. and roadblocks. I'm one of the roadblocks. And you're going to believe if I say no, the answer is no. You're going to have to
You mean it.
Yeah, you're going to have to figure something else out. So I think that's plays part of the smart guy in charge is you believe what I say.
Yeah. And you have to do it with conviction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so ironic, too, that you're the guy who says no, but you perform a lot of improv where the rule is yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, yes and, yes and. So, yeah, and a lot of the improv stuff I've learned that I tend to play the you know, the straight man. Mm-hmm. So I'm as ever, all my improv mates are doing funny, crazy stuff, I'm the one who's like, guys, we still need to put up the poster in the hallway. So
that's because you're the smart one.
I'm the smart one. it's 8:15 and our meeting starts at 8:20. Can we, you know, so mm-hmm. I'm that dweebish kind of serious dude.
But when you started out, so you started in news, you sure. were a reporter, and you looked too young, right?
Yeah.
So you've grown into this role a little bit too, of being the no powerful man, because you were the guy who was too young.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, if you're a reporter, you have to have authority. So the viewers believe you. They believe what you're saying. But when you look like you're 18, it doesn't work.
No one wants to believe you at 18.
It's like, what's that kid doing on TV? I was, you know, what was interesting is even years later when I was still in news but had gone behind the camera because mm-hmm. I knew that I wasn't, you know, going to be doing that, somebody had mistaken me as a high school student. So it's like, yeah, I'm in my late 20s now, but thank you. Thank you very much.
So they basically still don't want to listen to you at that point because you look like you're in high school.
I'm in high school, so it's like, yeah, well, whatever. So now... Uh-huh. I look like I could be on TV.
You've grown into your role.
I could be in TV news now.
Yeah. You could go back to that. But you got the job originally, so mm-hmm. it wasn't an issue. Like, someone thought you looked old enough to deliver news.
Yeah.
How did you get that job then?
You know, I sent a lot of demo reels out. and I just... I also did a road trip. Mm-hmm. It's something that an advisor at my journalism school said is just... get in a car with a whole bunch of tapes. Mm-hmm. And back in the days, they were actual physical tapes, not DVDs or MP3s or, you know, YouTube links. Mm-hmm. And just drive from town to town to town with TV stations and mm-hmm. set up meetings with news directors and meet with them and show mm-hmm. them the tape. So just old-fashioned get in front of people mm-hmm. and showing my stuff. And I think after my road trip, I ended up like with 3 job offers.
Wow. I mean, that's a fantastic way to start out.
Yeah.
So you picked the one that you thought was right. And then did you gradually just realize I look too young for this? Or did someone say to you, wait a minute, Scott, I'm not sure we believe you? How did that happen? You know, I feel like you took yourself out of it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what it was is, you know, you get your first job, you're excited, you do that. And I, you know, when it came time to look for the television news, is very nomadic. So in order to advance, you start at a very, very tiny market. Mm-hmm. I started in Pocatello, Idaho. Mm-hmm. And then you go to a slightly larger market with mm-hmm. a larger population. So you get more money because mm-hmm. the jobs pay more. And I just kind of learned that it's like, you know what, it's going to take me a very, very long time to age into this. And I didn't want to mm-hmm. be in... I love Pocatello. But I didn't feel like I wanted to stay there another, you know, 7 years. So I looked like I was actually mm-hmm. believable.
Right. That's funny, right? Because then in a small town, well, whatever, you know, give the high school boy a job.
I know. That's probably what it was. And I actually had a friend at the same time who was at the rival station uh-huh. And I think it was doing like the morning news okay. cut-ins for the Today Show, mm-hmm. and I think somebody did mistaken her for like a high school student. So it's like, yeah.
Well, that happens.
It does.
That happens.
It does.
Yeah. It takes time to be the authority figure.
I know. And now I'm the smart guy in charge.
There you go.
There you go.
That doesn't happen overnight.
It does not.
Your whole life, though, you've had this very interesting sort of storytelling medium that you do, like, visually, I guess, because mm-hmm. you also do photojournalism as well,
yeah.
is that right? And then you have a production company, so lots of storytelling. Would you say that is your main passion, storytelling in any form?
Yeah, pretty much. I think that telling stories is an essential part of our humanity. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, without our ability to relate with each other, we have nothing, no civilization. We have nothing kind of holding us together. Mm-hmm. And when you take a look at the cavemen, you know, you have drawings so they can explain what their lives were like. And mm-hmm. I think that's part of what makes us human. Mm-hmm. And so I take a lot of pride in being part of this tribe of storytellers and trying to connect people to each other through stories. And I just happened to be doing it in a visual realm, so mm-hmm. I started out as a kind of shooting still images, and then mm-hmm. you graduate to shooting moving images, and then being in front of the camera, and then mm-hmm. kind of doing it all now.
Right, the whole gamut. And one of the things I also love is that you still play trumpet, right? But you were in marching band. So
yeah.
I was a band geek, so I love that.
Yeah, this one time at band camp.
Yeah. I played saxophone, though.
Oh, wow.
It was hard to march. I got good triceps from that.
Holy cow.
I didn't actually play, though. Confession.
Oh, you didn't?
Pretty much everyone who knows me knows that. No. I was terrible. But I'm a real big joiner. And
sure.
So I loved being in band.
Sure.
But
sure.
Terrible musician. But you, on the other hand, not a terrible musician.
Well, thank you. No, I play trumpet. Mm-hmm. I still do. Actually, interesting story. When I was in high school, I didn't like marching band, but we were part of the Fort Collins High School uh-huh. Lambkins Purple Regiment, which meant that everything that we did was high step.
Oh.
So for the viewers out there who don't know, there's essentially two types of steps that you can do in marching band. One is a high step where you're,
like your knees are high.
Knees are high. And then the other one is you're essentially walking. It's called a roll step.
You roll your toes, which I didn't do very well. My
yeah.
band teacher shouted down at me, "You're marching like a duck."
Yeah.
All these years later, it sticks with me.
and I hated originally because, when you're bouncing up and down and you're holding a trumpet to your face, you get a lot of bruises in your mouth, And but then when I switched to or graduated and went to college and played college, we did the roll step, and it's like, oh, you can actually play, and you had to build up your shoulders,
right.
Obviously, but it was no longer, I didn't feel like I was getting hit in the mouth, 100 times a day.
Well, you must have really been good to play in college. You went to UC Boulder?
University of Colorado Boulder,
okay.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you must have been good to play in college. And you must have gone on some fun trips, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Back in the day, actually, I guess University of Colorado football team is good now.
Oh, were they not at the time?
Well, I when I went there, they just started getting good. And then they went through a huge period where they weren't. And then I guess this past year, they did okay. So they may have even gone to the Rose Bowl. So they were in line to go to the Rose Bowl. They didn't end up going. We did a lot of very, very cool trips to Disneyland for the Freedom Bowl. During my era, that's when it was just called the Rose Bowl. It was just called the Fiesta Bowl. It wasn't the Doritos.
Oh, with the branding.
The branding thing. So, yeah, Blue Bonnet Bowl in Houston. So
that's right. When I marched, too, they didn't have, or at least we never used, names like that.
Yeah.
So. Because I was at the Orange Bowl in Florida and the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And every Thanksgiving to this year, it's like when I see the parade, one of my friends, someone will bring up, remember when we were there? And we'll be like 100.
Yeah.
And we'll be like, remember Macy's.
I would have loved to have done Macy's.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was very cold. Very cold.
Very cold, I can imagine.
Yeah, but amazing.
Yeah.
So I love it that it's like, it doesn't matter how far out of band you are. It's like, this one time at band camp.
This one time at band camp. Oh my gosh, I remember band camp. Band camp was a lot of fun.
Was it anything like American Pie?
It was nothing like American Pie. That would be, and it was still fun. So, man, imagine if it was like American Pie. How was your band camp?
We didn't really have one. We had to go over, I can't remember if it was a week or two, at school.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no overnight. There was no big trip. It was just at school before school started. And so I don't normally burn or anything, and I did burn this one year, like, really terribly. So then I had to wear, like, completely covered up for the rest of our band camp. And we would be like, why are you covered up? It's like 90 degrees outside. And it's like, I'm really burned.
Oh.
like all the blistery. It was that part not so pleasant. that I did win a Most Spirited Award.
Oh, there you go. There you go. And you didn't play.
I didn't play. And I do still have my saxophone. How often do you break out your trumpet?
You know, quite a bit, because I play with the Denver Concert Band.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, you really are good. Not just, like, a little maybe good. Like, really good. Like, why didn't you bring your trumpet today?
I should have. No.
We need to do, like, an iTalk music.
There you go.
Bring out the trumpet.
Or I could do the iTalk movies or the Popcorn Talk fanfare.
Yes.
Da-da-da-da.
That's right.
Da-da-da-da.
I expect that next time.
Okay.
And I expect your next role to involve a trumpet.
That would be great. That would be great. I would have, Mozart in the jungle. That would be like the ideal role as this frustrated trumpet player who's like, I'm third chair. You know, when am I going to get principal? Hello. So that would be great. One day.
That comment reminds me. I know this is not all about me. So then I started playing in concert band bass clarinet because there were plenty of saxophones, and let's face it, I wasn't really playing anyway. Well, our drum major was also not particularly good musically. He was a great drum major, but not good at playing. So he also played bass clarinet. So we would joke around all the time, like, I'm first chair, you're last chair. There were two of us. And he'd be like, no, you're second to last. Like, we were like the two in the whole band that was like a really good band, and neither of us would be playing. So you need to bring your trumpet.
There you go. It's like, it sounds like we're missing some bass notes in there. Tubas, can you play a little louder?
That's right. Can you cover our missing bass clarinets, please?
they're actually present, but they're missing.
Yes, we were very much missing. So, at any rate, we're looking forward then to a role with you involving a trumpet. And in the meantime, we've got The Space Between Us coming out soon, so everyone can catch you there delivering floating babies.
Floating babies, and got The Tail coming up somewhere down the road with Laura Dern, so they're still in post-production on that, so...
Well, excellent. Yeah. Well, lots of great places to watch for you. Scott, where can everyone find you on social media to keep up with all of your great projects?
They can find me on Twitter, @ Scott Takeda, SCOTTTAKEDA, and then also the usual IMDb.
And I'm Zoe Hewitt. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram @ Zoe Said What. That's Zoe Said What. You can also find me on YouTube @ Zoe Hewitt, where I do a weekly movie analysis show. Thank you so much for joining us on iTalk Movies. Take care. Bye-bye.
Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network. We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.